When it comes to saving money as a small business owner, every little bit helps. When you lower your shipping costs and make returns easier, your customers stay happy whilst you save money. Worry less about the bottom line when you save money with ShipStation. Go to ShipStation.com and use the code Jim today and sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code Jim. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suitable to your schedule. Visit betterhelp.com/IDK today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/IDK. Bin full of recycling. Aaron's softball trophy. Why does he still have it here? It's been a couple of days now. You might find out, and I don't know about that, with Jim Jefferies. As usual, I just did what I saw in the room. Aaron won a trophy. Well done, Aaron.
I don't think a lot of people know who Aaron is on our podcast.
Aaron's our technician, and Aaron won a softball trophy.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Did you win a trophy?
No, I mean, I'm just saying because you referred to Aaron and I didn't know.
One of my pet hates is when people my age start going like this. These fucking kids today, they all get a participation trophy. Yeah. When I was a kid, we did.
Yeah.
We did. My soccer team never won. At the end of the year, they all gave us a trophy. And that was in the early 80s, my friend.
And anytime you talk about like anti-bullying, they're like, I got bullied as a kid and I turned out fine. I'm like, you didn't, though.
You did,
like,
you're still mad about it.
You're obviously...
And also, bullying's a weird one because I just did this thing for Spotlight Australia where they asked me, I don't know, it would have aired by now, but I don't know whether they put this in. I sort of said, yeah, I was bullied in school. They go, you were bullied? Like, the interviewer was like, what? And I'm like, I had a fat mum who was a teacher at the school. It wasn't easy times.
Yeah.
You know, it was hard yards having a mum who was a teacher at the school. You used to yell at everyone, you know. Mm. Anyway, but then I thought about it, about bullying. Like, I think everyone experiences that feeling of bullying. And then there is a chance, I don't know, I know you won't believe this, that I may have bullied some others.
You?
And maybe on this podcast.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not positive, right? I'm not positive. But, you know, there's a lot of survival going on in high school.
It would be a fair bet.
Yeah. I don't know if I always took up for people who were being bullied. I'll tell you that much. I sat back and watched.
You know,
it.
That's a form of bullying. People who don't speak up.
Yeah, I didn't speak up. I was too busy getting bullied myself to fucking become a superhero. I was just trying to get through the day.
I beat up a bully.
Yeah, and now he's on a podcast and we're going, this guy, he was into marine biology, he used to beat me up at school, I was bullied.
You want to know what his name was? Bobby Dickman. It's already a bad name.
And he never got bullied, Bobby Dickman.
What was Bobby Dickman doing to you?
He wasn't like a big dude, but he was just this like pesty guy, you know, and he was always like just messing around with people and like... It was in junior high school, and at one time after we had homeroom, you know, where they just like take it. It's like, what a weird thing that was. We're gonna take attendance and then go to your next class, and we're walking out of that, and he kept poking at me, and he knocked the books out of my hand, and I picked him up. I go, dude, stop. I'd seen him bully other people like that, dude, and I was like, dude, don't do that again. He did it, and then I went to go pick him up, and he could tell that I was like angry at him now, so he kind of took off. I caught up with him at the top of the stairs. I grabbed him, got him a headlock, and you know those doors like that they would hold by magnets, and if you press them, they go. I kept ramming his head into the door, undoing it and doing it until they came and broke it up, and then I got suspended for a week.
Bobby Dickman has brain damage. Yeah.
So cut to my mom lived in the Florida Keys at the end of her life. That's where she lived. Right. On that street, the Dickmans, they had a house there on that street that was like their Keys home or something.
Is
like that.
Is that the house you made me piss on?
No, shit. The one you took a shit on.
All right.
The one you had a piss on was just a girl I had a crush on. She didn't. She returned my affection. We had a lot of things to do when we were there in the Keys. Anyways, Dickman, how you doing, Dickman?
So
thanks for subscribing.
Well, I every time you talk, it's, I don't know about women, but men, whenever you talk to men about having fights, they're always like this. Yeah, I've been in four fights in my life. I've won them all. No one ever goes, I've been in four or five fights, and every time I've just been on the crowd crying.
I think Tommy would admit that.
I'm gonna tell you, I've been in three fights in school, two I lost by a mile, and one that I had a George McFly moment with a bully. Like a proper Georgia. We were in, okay, so this is where all the bullies hang out. We were doing the High School Musical, as you do.
Nice.
I was in year 8 and a kid in year 10. So we're talking a 14-year-old versus a 16-year-old. This is a big age gap, right? And they were making us learn the songs, right? And in between every song, this guy would flick me in the ear. Now, I think this guy's a bit of a nerd that he probably got bullied by kids older than him, but he was now taking it out on younger kids, right? And he would just flick me in the ear, flick me in the ear. And then he'd say things about me mum because me mum was a teacher there, which I was pretty immune to. And then he kept flicking. And then I turned around and with my voice that had not broken yet, went, "If you do that again, I'm going to punch you in the face." And they went, he didn't do it again, but I turned around and him and his mate went, "If you do it again, I'm going to punch you." Like this, right? And I, just like George McFly, with plenty of time to think about it, I closed my fist like out of a movie. And he was standing behind me, and because I was shorter, younger, I turned around and uppercutted him into the nose. His nose went back into his head. Blood went fucking everywhere. Right? Blood went everywhere. He fucking fell to the ground like a bag of shit, right? Everyone's just amazed, because this is in front of teachers in a choir stance, right? Like, this is like, you know what I mean?
Badass choir
stance. It's like getting into a fight in a nightclub where you're like, and waiting for security to tackle me when? Right? Yeah. And I was just like, oh, no, my hand hurt, right? And the guy, he stood up and he was still like stumbling. Like, I've never seen a punch this pure. Like, it was just unbelievable. So, bang. Anyway, so he went to, the teacher came and yelled at me, and the teacher who was playing the piano, who incidentally I think there were some issues with him later on in years later, but we won't get into that. But he looked up over and he went, "No, I watched it." He warned him. Very strange. He warned him. That's what's about that. Anyway, so I was kicked out of the classroom. Another teacher takes him to go and get his face cleaned, right? His nose is broke, blood everywhere, right? And she goes to take his face clean. He's still being held up. The teacher, he comes out and he just sees me standing there. I'm a little kid, right? He's got bigger mates. And I thought, my mates aren't going to go against his mates. Yeah. I only had about 2 friends. Like, what was I going to fucking do, right? So I'm standing there in the hallway going, fuck, my life's fucked now. There's going to be retribution for this, right? Retaliation. Anyway, so he came out and he went, "You're fucking..." The teacher's holding me. He goes, "You're dead, Nugent. You're dead." Like this, like this blood coming out of his mouth. You're dead, like that. And so I just doubled down and I went, "And there's more where that came from." And then for the rest of the year, I just, every corner I came around, I looked around.
He never did anything?
No, he never did nothing, no. And the funny thing is, because my brother Scott was a couple of years older than him, so his mates all started teasing this bloke that he was beaten up by a younger bloke. So I think he got teased enough for it. But, like, what's he going to do? Like, in hindsight, I thought he was going to hunt me down, but shit, I mean, in hindsight, what are you going to do? You're going to be the guy who hunts down the 14-year-old and, right. And beats him up? Like, like you had your moment. It's like...
Yeah. Ben Affleck.
I've forgotten his fucking name though. I wish he knew. I wouldn't know like his name because he's probably moved on with his life. and he doesn't need to hear from fucking me, I'll tell you that much.
Johnny Ballsack.
Yeah.
Like all the bullies have terrible names.
I think that's why they're so upset. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what did we have? Mad Mike was a kid that was when I was in year 7, there was a kid in year 11 called Mad Mike. Right. I only got a good year to watch this guy. And everyone would stand around and go, "Mad Mike, Mad Mike." And he would fucking climb up flagpoles, death-defying things, get to the roof of the gym and hang off a girder. Like, if he let go, he dies. And we're all kids, yeah.
Mad Mike.
Like, his adults should be going, "Get down from there.
Please, I'm going to lose my job."
Yeah, Mad Mike, Mad Mike. And years later, I was walking around North Sydney and I saw Mad Mike just in his shirt and whatever. And I was like, "I think that's Mad Mike."
Just in a shirt.
Yeah, yeah. Like he's in a work shirt with a tie. Like he obviously works in some office somewhere. Okay. You know what I mean? And I just sort of, I was walking behind him and I went, "Mad Mike." And he turned around and looked at me. "Fuck off." Yeah, it was him, all right. Hope you're doing Hope you're doing well, Mad Mike from St. Ives High. You would have graduated in 1990, mate. I hope you're doing well.
Reach out.
You're almost done with your Europe tour.
Europe, you've been a dream.
And I still got about a week or so.
Well,
left.
I've been to this town and then I went to that town and drank champagne in Reykjavik.
No, I think you're
Reykjavik.
Went I don't know. I think
Greece
you had a week left.
And
right?
I had some time and Forrest showed me his dick.
I think you're actually flying to Dubai today.
Let's recount that tale. So by the time you listen to it, bye-bye, Dubai.
Please welcome our guest today, Dr. Gregory Thielman.
Hello, Doctor. Now it's time to play.
Yes, no. Yes, no.
Yes, no.
Yes, no.
Maybe.
Judging a book by its cover.
They can't hear the song.
Yeah, I know, but
it just sounds like you're saying
it. I forgot to tell. Wait, they can?
I think they can.
Did you hear that? The song?
Dr. Thielman, did you hear a song?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I heard yes, no.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
They can hear it now. They can hear it now.
Oh, I thought this studio, whole time it's just Jim going.
I know. I was thinking that yesterday too.
So, is it Scrabble?
Scrabble.
There's Scrabble in the background.
He's got a Scrabble board in the background. Why wouldn't you pick Scrabble out of all the things? Scrabble's as good an episode as we've ever done.
Yeah, Scrabble is good.
I mean, we're not doing Scrabble, but are you an expert in Scrabble, Dr. Thielman? We can have you back.
I do play a lot of Scrabble, yes.
I can't play the Scrabble because I'm a bad speller.
Yeah.
And everything I do is like, if I get an S, I'm excited. Slap that on the end of another long word.
I don't know. I don't know if you know what this is. This topic, so do you want
to? Well, okay, well, if you're going to do that, then I won't even bother guessing.
I did actually mention this last week, but I don't think you'll remember it.
The second half of this word, there was a DC comic book hero that was like considered to be the first guy that was kind of comedic in the DC world.
The first guy who was comedic in the DC world?
Something Man, yeah. It's an old guy.
Oh, I don't
He's
remember.
Bendable. That.
Mallet. Rubber Man.
Not close.
Elastic Man.
Yeah, it's Plastic Man.
Plastic Man.
I've never heard of him.
Never heard of Plastic Man.
He's there.
Also, there's plenty of comical people in the DC comics. All the villains are funny.
First one.
Plastic Man would be pretty funny.
Yeah.
Plastic Man, he never goes away.
Yeah. Well, we're not talking about Plastic Man, but okay. It's something.
So it's something man.
Something. Nope. That's something plastic.
So something plastic. Elastic plastic.
I'm just going to tell you
Fantastic
what we're talking.
Plastic.
I'm just going to tell you. How about that? Because we'll be here all day.
Okay.
Neuroplasticity.
Well, that's not a thing for
me. Well, Dr. Thielman's here to talk about it.
Neuroplasticity.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go for it.
Okay. Yeah, I think once we start asking questions, you'll see kind of what.
Sure.
Dr. Gregory Thielman is a full tenured professor in the physical therapy program at St. Joseph's University with a secondary appointment in the neuroscience program. Dr. Thielman is a clinical researcher specializing in motor learning and motor control recovery for individuals post-stroke. He has practiced clinically continuously over his 30-year career in home care for much of the past 20 years and since 2020 in subacute rehab centers. Dr. Thielman has presented and been published nationally. He leads the international medical mission trip for Samson College programs and is the director of the Patricia Leahy, I think I'm saying that right.
Leahy, sorry.
Movement Science Lab. For more information about this subject and Dr. Thielman, you can visit the neurosciencefoundation.org or the Enigma Stroke Recovery Network. And you can find him on LinkedIn at hashtag Greg Thielman and also ResearchGate.
Oh, so that's Enigma Stroke. It wasn't like Enigma Stroke.
Enigma is an acronym, it looks like. It's all capitalized. I don't know what it stands for. Yeah. And the Stroke Recovery Network, which is a big network that you're a part of, I believe, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Tremendous network.
And maybe you can tell us a little bit and you know about just how you got into this field and what led you.
Yeah. Well, so I, not to bore you with too much of the details, but I did start off as a young physical therapist and working in sports medicine. And that's kind of the way it was my niche. I was a football player in college, and then I was hurt and went into physical therapy, as so many people do after an injury. And then I started practicing that area. But then after a few years, I decided that, helping athletes was cool, but it wasn't enough for me. So then I started working in rehab centers, and I worked with spinal cord patients and, you know, people that lives were awfully devastated because of the trauma they had. And soon after that, I decided to go back to school. And I big shout out to Teachers College, Columbia University, because that is where a big part of neuroplasticity research started. It was one of my mentors there was Ann Gentile. She's since passed away, but she was she bridged kind of motor learning, which we're going to talk about, in psychology. So she had two PhDs, so pretty amazing woman. And she bridged those two fields, and it kind of developed neuroscience, and it evolved to what is we know today as neuroplasticity, how the brain recovers from these traumas. So I started in that field, like I said, 5 years after practice, and now 25 years later, I've pretty much evolved to do most of my time is spent around doing that, either teaching or doing research in that area or practicing therapy.
All right, well, great. I'm going to ask Jim a series of questions here about neuroplasticity. It might be pretty short because you might say, I don't know. Maybe you'd give an answer, you try. I don't know. To be fair, I don't know anything about this either, so I'm not like up here bragging. Like, I don't know. I was on your side, I wouldn't know anything either. And at the end of me asking these questions, Dr. Thielman, you're going to grade him 0 through 10, 10 being the best on his accuracy of the answers. Kelly's going to grade him on confidence. I'm going to grade him on et cetera. I'll combine all those answers together. 0 through 10.
21 through 30 first, right?
You don't know anything about this topic, right? That would be that obvious.
Right.
11 through 20, you have to spell neuroplasticity.
Okay.
21 through 30, you have to tell us what is an Archaeopteryx.
Yeah, I don't know any of those things.
Well, Archaeopteryx, we've mentioned.
You already mentioned what neuroplasticity
was. Well, what is neuroplasticity?
And I've forgotten.
what is it?
I go in, I got that, and then I went,
he just said it a minute ago, maybe.
Yeah, left.
Do you know what it is?
The brain telling you how to, your neurons to work.
Okay.
You know how to move.
Do you know what neurogenesis is, or might be a difference between that and neuroplasticity?
The genesis is when your brain tells your body how to move, and neuroplasticity is when when doctors get involved to help with that.
Okay. Tell me when you want to tap out. Yeah, no problem. What is the role of neuroplasticity in learning and memory?
Oh, I probably need some neuroplasticity if it comes in pill forms, because my memory's we'll find gone out. To shit.
Yeah.
it's fucking awful. I might get some... Nugenics, or is that which one's the one for the brains? Those pills, can't even remember that.
I don't know.
Isn't Nugenics the golf one?
Yeah,
testosterone.
But it makes you really good at golf.
It had a big golf ad recently for some reason.
When I was reading through these questions like earlier, I was like, neuroplasticity.
Neuroplasticity is a good name for a band.
Yeah,
and they could support the Strokes.
Here you go, Ken. Can neuroplasticity be improved through practice?
Yes. Yes, of course it can, Forrest.
Okay.
Anything can be improved with practice.
I'm going to ask you a bunch of yes-no questions.
Practice makes perfect.
Can it be affected by age?
Age and AIDS.
Okay. What are some examples of behaviors or experiences that can enhance neuroplasticity?
Repetitive cognitive memorizing.
And that was really smart.
Yeah. And so you see my little finger there, right?
Yeah, I see it.
And then my brain, that's my brain doing that.
Yeah.
Right? But I'm working in touch with the muscles. If I do that enough, right?
Just make your pinky going up and down for people who can't see.
There'll be muscle memory.
Yeah.
And then when I'm really old with dementia, I'll still be able to do that. I won't forget that.
What is the relationship between neuroplasticity and mental illnesses such as depression and anxiety?
If you get neuroplasticity or you don't have enough of it, you'll get sad. Of course you will. Okay. You got to have the right balance.
We're going to jump ahead here. We'll go through all these questions, but I think...
I'm dumb.
I don't know what answer to any of these, so...
He's actually doing okay.
Oh, wow, really? Okay. He says you're doing There's okay.
Some of them.
One of those. You did. How about this? We'll jump over this. Can neuroplasticity be used to treat chronic pain, and how?
Oh, of course.
And how?
And through repetition.
Okay.
And practice.
I'm going to ask one last question, and we'll go over all these. Can neuroplasticity help in the treatment of neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's?
The answer is always yes.
Alzheimer's.
You're
how
not going to go like this. Can, what's the topic again? Neuroplasticity. Can that bring your bins in? No, right? But can it help with any medical condition? Yes.
All right, let's talk to Dr. Thielman.
All the above.
Yeah. On the brief questions I asked him, Dr. Thielman, how did Jim do on his knowledge of neuroplasticity?
He actually, you know, is the little bit he came out with, there was a few of them that he got right. there was about two or three of them that he actually was spot on, and he probably doesn't want to expound upon them, but he got the tip of them.
You mean when he said yes? When he said yes?
Yes, of course.
Yes.
Yes, of course.
He said it with confidence. Come on.
I love the finger. That's right. He's not. Yeah.
Not totally wrong. I'm not totally wrong. I'm not totally wrong.
It's like when Cliff Clavin was on Jeopardy.
Yeah.
His final answer was
people who haven't been in my kitchen.
People that haven't been in his kitchen. He's like, I'm not wrong. They haven't been in my kitchen. How do you do in confidence, Kelly?
Well, the of course is up to his score. It was going to be a two, but now it's
five.
Well,
I thought the questions would be difficult, and then Forrest threw me some lobs in there.
Well,
can it help with this? Like, if you go, can it help with memory? Oh, no, it makes it worse.
Don't do this.
There's no doctor who's given a procedure that makes things worse.
Well, I think, we can't just delve into it.
If we did this podcast 300 years ago, I'd be doing well on leeches and the benefits of.
I don't know what I'm going to give you on et cetera, but I'm just going to ask you to spell neuroplasticity. So you might be able to get this. Yeah. Neuroplasticity.
Neuro. N-E-R. N-E-U-R-O-P-L-A-S-T.
Plasticity.
Yeah,
you're good.
T-I-S-T-E-Y.
So close. It was T-I-C-I-T-Y. But you did really good.
Yeah, that's pretty good for me.
You. Jim is not a good speller, as you said. This is.
I spell real bad. I spell so bad that my text can't even be predicted. I just go, the computer just goes, this is obviously.
That's a new one.
This is obviously a child mashing a keyboard.
Half of my job is just deciphering Jim's text.
Dr. Thielman, first question, what is neuroplasticity? Can you give us an answer, please?
Yeah, I'll give you a little elevator talk. But, you know, I like the way Jim started out because the idea is we have to make it so anybody can understand it.
Yeah.
And I tell this to my students, and like if I present, I tell this that anybody can understand it. So the idea is that the brain is always malleable. So, you know, we start off and we figure out maybe as babies how to roll and then sit up and get head control and all of that. Our brain is going wild. It's developing. So that's, you know, the neurogenesis that's going on. So that is all good. But then at some point, certain functions of the brain may slow down because, you know, spend our life and doing mechanics. So because if we're mechanics, our hands are our area of the brain that's as far as mechanics is so well developed, and as well as the problem solving area of the brain, so well developed. But maybe higher level cognitive thinking area of the brain, not developed at all because they're not, you know, although they're doing a lot of problem solving, they're not doing a lot of higher level thinking. They just figure out the problem and then they do so much with their hands. So the analogy is that our brains can continuously develop. And after a trauma, there used to be a theory before neuroplasticity became a thing, really in the past 20 to 30 years, that you had that area of the brain damage, and then nothing was ever going to change after maybe the first 5 or 6 months. They said, go to recovery, go to therapy, and then after that, nothing is going to change for you. And then, you know, some theories came out, and then people started, you know, doing a lot of research in this area and showing that that was not the case at all, that our brains are constantly developing, and it's up to the experience and the people that set up the experiences, like people like myself and others in therapy and others that do this work, to figure out what's the best experience that can help develop the brain.
It's funny that you said the brain's always developing, or it might slow down, or it might whatever. So I have an app on my phone because I have a baby. Right, and on the app it tells you, it starts from when my wife gets pregnant and this is what the baby's doing in the stomach, and then when it gets out it starts telling me it should be taking its steps here, it should be rolling over by this age, it should be doing this, and now my baby's at an age it should know 5 to 20 words, and so you start to feel a little bit bad if it's not reaching the milestones, and some of the milestones it gets to earlier than others. But I reckon that app should just keep going for the rest of your life.
Right.
Just keep going.
Because when your vision will go.
Yeah. Just like this, things might be a bit more blurry for you.
Yeah. Start forgetting names.
Yeah. Uh-huh. How's your piss stream? I feel like that might be getting a bit weaker.
This is interesting because I always think, because I'm starting to like forget people's names, for instance, that I don't know that well. or things like that. So I always think my brain is devolving now, but you're saying that it's just, it's not. I mean, it can be retrained.
To yes. Like, yeah. So
does weed make your brain stronger?
What was that, Jim?
Does weed make your brain stronger? This is a Hail Mary.
No evidence of that.
Ah, no evidence of it? Oh, well, I'll forget anyway.
It does relax you. We know that. And, you know, you got to be in a relaxed state to learn and to figure things out. So it's not a bad thing.
All right. But way good.
But yeah. When I'm forgetting stuff or whoever, it's because we're not using that part of our brain anymore. Is that what, or is
it? Okay. So, right. So that area needs extra attention. And, right. And you know, the theory is that the nouns go first. So names, right. Or the objects. You're like, oh, I used to be able to call that all the time what it was. But it starts, you know, beginning to suffer. But, you know, verbs, they stay with us just because of how our brain, I guess, doesn't allow us to control those things. So, but priming it can help. So that I do this tremendous class. It's called Ageless Grace. It started off as a program just for seniors, but now my colleague and myself have been testing it out on individuals post-stroke, and we got a couple of publications on it. It's a lot of fun. So it's basically where they're doing cognitive activity while they're moving their arms and legs. So we kind of do that naturally in therapy, but oftentimes the therapists get so focused on just trying to get people to improve their walking or improve their movement or their balance, or so they forget about doing the dual task of making sure they do the motor activity and think. So to solve your nouns issue, there's a lot of evidence to show that just doing more brain training games or just having more fun where you have to kind of manipulate things in your mind. So,
well, I'll be honest, doctor, I've already forgotten your name, right?
Dr. Thielman.
Thielman. So is that maybe why I can remember stand up better than anything else, because I'm moving and talking, or is because you said with movement involved?
Absolutely. That's a great analogy. Yeah. Absolutely. You are right. And think about it. I'm much better in the classroom when I'm moving around and I feel like the juices are flowing, and I'm even better if I just did a exercise activity half an hour before, because then my brain is really primed and I'm really, you know, energetic, and I've all my thoughts are coming to me easily, as opposed to, if you're sitting statically, or we're sitting now, sometimes the energy is not flowing. I have one exercise physiology colleague across the hall from me. He walks all day long on the treadmill during his meetings, and he comes out of there and he is ready to, you know, explode because he's got so many ideas on his mind. But there's a lot to that. So it's just movement, and it's making us do two things at once that helps neuroplasticity.
Yeah, one of the questions I didn't ask you, Jim, is can physical exercise enhance neuroplasticity?
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Dr. Thielman was just saying that, but that makes sense, like why when people that are older, that are more mobile, that walk, that like when my mom, before she passed away, but she made it a point to always be moving. Not only so her muscles weren't atrophying.
She was just trying to get away from Forrest.
I was like, come back here.
When it comes to saving money as a small business owner, every little bit helps. ShipStation gives you access to discounts of up to 84% of USPS or UPS rates. And you can manage every order from one simple-to-use dashboard. When you lower shipping costs and make returns easy, your customers stay happy whilst you save money. ShipStation is incredibly easy to use and makes it easy to run your business efficiently. ShipStation effortlessly integrates everywhere you sell online, including Amazon, Etsy, eBay, Shopify, and more. Manage every order from one simple dashboard, automate routine shipping tasks, print shipping labels, easily compare rates and delivery times to optimize every shipment, and automate delivery notifications. Plus, there's a 60-day free trial. Even if you don't have a business, sign up. Maybe it'll inspire you to have one. Maybe it won't. But you'll have ShipStation. ShipStation hooks you up with the industry-leading discount, so you'll never worry about paying for shipping. Overpaying for shipping. Oh, that's, you'll have to still pay for shipping, but you ain't overpay. We use it, don't we? Sell Me Records.
That's right.
Yeah, Jack does it. He loves the ship station. Sometimes I'm upstairs in bed and I hear Jack just sending off something and then he goes, woohoo, ship station. Like that. I hear it. Over 130,000 companies have grown their e-commerce businesses with ship station and 98% of companies that stick with ship station for a year become customers for life. Worry less about the bottom line when you save money with ShipStation. Go to ShipStation.com, use the code Jim today, and sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code Jim. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I love the therapy. I've been going to the therapy. I'm nervous about to go off to Europe for 6 weeks without therapy. So you know what I'm doing?
BetterHelp.
I'm going on BetterHelp.
Nice.
So I can do, because I normally meet people in person, but now I'm using BetterHelp Smart. While I'm on the road.
Yeah.
Getting to know yourself is a lifelong process, especially because we're always growing and changing. Therapy is all about deepening your self-awareness and understanding, because sometimes we don't know what we want or why we react the way we do or why we act the way we do until we talk things through. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist who can take you on a journey of self-discovery from wherever you are. Once again, not available in North Korea. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched up with a licensed therapist and switch therapist at any time at no additional charge. Discover your potential with BetterHelp. That's betterhelp.com/IDK today to get 10% off your first month. I put the code in myself. That's betterhelp.com/IDK.
No, but I think it was her muscles went naturally, but also I think it helped her brain too, I think, like to keep, like, I guess what you're saying, yeah.
You are absolutely right.
How do I remember people's names better? What do I have to do? Because I've gotten worse at this.
So there is good literature out there that shows that if you do more word activities in your brain, so, you know, like a lot of people love to do crosswords, okay? Certainly seniors spend time doing crosswords, and it's a good thing because it's good for your words and your brain.
Loads of idiots play
like
Scrabble.
Do some of the other. Go ahead.
I said loads of idiots play Scrabble.
Oh, there you go, right? Scrabble's so much fun.
Anyway, I got to stop patting you off. I want to know how to remember names.
So some people do crosswords, as you were saying, the older bit, which I do those. But yeah.
Crosswords are good, but I encourage them to move. So in other words, do an activity. You know, there's this trail making activity where you stand up and it's like a huge twister board and you kind of have to walk and do it. So when I'm with a group of individuals after a stroke or if I go to a senior center, I'll introduce that to them and say, okay, we're going to do a trail making activity on this big, huge twister and you're going to move because you're going to be walking from space to space and you're going to, you know, it's like a big twister game really is what we do with them. And they have to think and they have to work around other people. So it's balance activity. It's tremendous activity. So, there is lots of ways, as long as we move and think at the same time, that we are priming our brains to not forget or priming our brains to stay up for whatever it is, the activity that we're engaged in.
Now, I'm very certain or scared that I'm going to get dementia. I just feel like it runs in my family.
Your dad doesn't have that, right?
My dad's got that's another thing. But anyway, so I can it fix dementia? How far away are we from fixing dementia? And follow-up question, you know, whenever you meet someone with Tourette's, right, and they can swear and all that type of stuff, they always, people I've talked to who have had Tourette's, they said it was good in school because you could just tell the teacher to fuck off and go, Tourette's, right? I reckon if I get dementia, it's like how I told my wife my vasectomy was going to take a week to heal up instead of 2 days, so she'd leave me alone for a week. I reckon I will I've forgotten something again to get away with it. Yeah, I'll take advantage of it. In the early days when I still know a little bit that I've got it,
yeah,
I'll be abusing the shit out of my dementia.
How many questions did you have? What's the question you want to ask him?
The first one is can it stop dementia, and do the dementia patients you ever use dementia in their favor?
Oh, that's funny about the using it in their favor. You know, okay, so early on in the dementia process, they know. So then they go to get help and they go to, you know, figure out how to slow it down. And there are certain meds that have shown that they can help a little bit. Certainly the activity in conjunction with the meds is the ideal program. But then at some point when they can no longer slow it down, they don't totally know. Well, but we don't know they know because they're not able to be explicit about it. So they probably do use it to their favor because we don't know what they're thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll just be showing up in strip clubs all over town. Well, I wandered away.
Yeah, that's what he did in Breaking Bad, didn't he? Remember he had the, he pretended he had an episode.
Oh, yeah, he was naked in the grocery store.
And then his wife, yeah.
Yeah. That was a documentary.
Well, I don't know. It comes from somewhere. And then, so neuroplasticity is different from neurogenesis. You mentioned neurogenesis. What's the difference between those two?
Well, so it's kind of like how we initially develop. So all of that goes into the, you know, our brains aren't necessarily called on to be very plastic to recover until we age or until we want to develop certain areas of the brain that aren't highly developed. So that's all neuroplasticity. Neurogenesis is just what happens, like Jim just said, you know, early in birth, you know, everything is starting to connect. So that all those connections that are starting to develop, that's the neurogenesis. And then that's how we get our genetics, you know, because all of those connections come together. And then we are able to, you know, people have certain genes that come together and allow them to continuously, you know, move and control the mind. So, I mean, I'm not an expert on neurogenesis, obviously.
Oh, that's a fine.
It's
yeah.
not, it's more than very we are. Different than
you know more than we do. So that's that you're an expert here now. So what are some examples of behaviors or experiences that can enhance neuroplasticity? You talked a little bit about it. This is when Jim was moving his finger, I think.
Yeah, the finger. Yeah. I already answered it.
Oh, do we
he
not
He said it was right.
About? Oh, okay.
I don't remember that.
Let's not look further into
besides it. Besides exercise, because eating, is that or is there any?
Well, okay, so nutritional supplements are, that's a whole different field. But however, you know, we know that nutritional supplements will help. But the time frame of when they can get to our bloodstream and have an effect is that's the research that's going on now. We don't know how long. You know, we know certain foods are going to have fast effects versus other foods that are going to be much more, we take them much longer before we want to have our peak performance. And nowadays, the idea is not just peak performance motor, it's peak performance of your brain, you know, your brain motor interaction. So when is that peak performance going to occur? So there's good evidence that shows, like I said, if you exercise about maybe an hour or so, that leads up to about a half an hour before your activity. And then you kind of cool down, and then you'll be good for about an hour. You'll be really primed, and it's your highest level of thinking and processing and reaction times and responding to cues that maybe give you interference. So that's a problem in our brain when we have interference. But you'll be able to work through those if you do that priming activity. Exercise is one of them. You know, like people that are unable to exercise, doing some cognitive activity, like I said, the crossword or something like that is another one. Mm. And then in therapy, we actually do these brain stimulations. We'll put brain stimulations on the head. And for a while there was, you know, these gimmicks that were knockoffs that people were just buying them. Athletes were just buying them and putting them on their head before their activity. And there's not much evidence for those yet. So, but they're out there.
So the next time, if I ever get an acting job ever again, because I find dialogue very hard to learn. So exercise, and then the 30 minutes afterwards,
do it on a treadmill, like walk on a treadmill.
Practice your lines on a treadmill.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Or
practice
on the bike or something like that.
Practice your lines on a treadmill or a bike.
You got the bike.
Would fucking count?
It's an activity.
Are you going to practice your lines while having sex?
No, I'll just tape them to my wife's back.
Well, she should read the other part.
No, she'll have the other part on a pillow.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's reading the lines back and forth.
Yeah.
And you could return the favor for her when she gets a part. Yeah.
Nah, she's got a young brain. She's fine. She doesn't need the help.
But also, I was talking to you yesterday, I'm doing the ketamine therapy, and that is meant to increase neuroplasticity as well. So if you want a drug route instead of an exercise route, you could try ketamine.
You can, but most people, if they want the drug route, they need to do some activity in conjunction.
Yes. And Kelly's like, damn it.
Well, you don't do activity in the ketamine part, but yes, you are encouraged to walk before
people exercising on TV.
Yeah, I need to get in shape. That's no secret. So
just, just a different shape. you're already in a shape.
We were talking about this the other day. When you go to a doctor now, it's like they either tell you to hydrate or lose weight. Yeah. And stuff. But I feel like
hydrate, lose weight, do crosswords exercise.
Yeah. But and also just even what you were saying, sometimes before a show, you're lying in bed. You're like, I'm just going to stay in bed until before I have to leave. Turns out that's not a good idea. We'll get there. I forgot all my jokes.
Is fish oil a good thing for it? Everyone takes fish oil for everything.
Oh, I know. There's no evidence for fish oil. I mean, I think there's a little bit of evidence for decreasing some joint pain, but no good evidence that fish oil is, no, this is not. I have to say the supplements... that's young research that nobody knows. Fascinating. I'll give you one fascinating thing now, and then we'll save it for later. But there's this factor that runs in our brain and in the blood in our brain. It's called brain-derived neurotrophic factor. So it's BDNF. It was a huge buzz for about the past 10 years. Everybody was like, this exercise is going to increase my BDNF. It's going to it's going to increase my mood. It's going to decrease my depression. So everybody was prescribing that, we had to test people's BDNF in their blood system. And it circulates in your brain, but basically by just taking, a phlebotomist taking your blood, you can get your readings. So they decided that this was such a buzz in the field, and the research ended up being kind of, that's not the be-all end-all. But for a while there, the thought was that was the be-all end-all. I even had a publication on it, and we thought that we're going to track BDNF with all of our subjects, and if they increased, they were going to get much better with their motor abilities because we were priming their brains so much more. But it finds out that's not it.
I know a lot of blokes my age taking testosterone. Is that good? I don't want to take testosterone because I wank enough.
Yeah, I don't want to do it either.
I don't need to step this up.
How are you going
to
remember your lines, though?
I know a lot of comics who take testosterone. I'm not, Bill Burr did a good bit on this where he goes, I don't want the testosterone of a man in his 20s. Yeah,
that's dangerous.
I don't want to get out of a car and go, listen here, buddy. Like,
Right.
Yeah, so is that bad? I don't know if testosterone, how it affects. I don't know.
It's meant to help everything, isn't it? Does cocaine help? Like, if you take, loads of cocaine in your 20s, does that make your memory better in your 40s?
Before you answer that, doctor, here's a question I was going to ask you, Jim. What are some examples of behaviors or experiences that can impair neuroplasticity? I think that might be on there.
Cocaine.
Oh, yeah. Drugs. So interference, you might be right. It would impair neuroplasticity because.
Damn it.
Yeah. The long-term effects of cocaine. Yeah, there is some good evidence for that. Yes. But also anything that promotes anything that really forces interference in our brain, that's too much. So we have there's this optimal theory where it's the just right amount of activity between the motor activity and the cognitive activity. And when you go too much, then the performance really degrades. And that's obvious when you start to, in general, sometimes therapists just talk too much to their patients. They can't understand. They can't follow you because you've interfered with their processing, or when you give them too much instruction before they learn a new task, it doesn't work because it's too much. So interference is a big problem.
What would be the first thing you would do in therapy to, for lack of a better term, fix someone?
So the environment. So as a stroke rehab specialist who focuses on neuroplasticity, and no matter what type of therapy I'm going to use, first thing I'm going to think about is setting up the right environment. So if they're really confused and they don't like loud noises, I'm going to put them in a quiet space and figure out whatever it is task that we're going to try to improve on. That's going to, ultimately, like Jim said at the very beginning of the show, when he was moving his finger, his brain was telling him to do that. That doesn't happen without that good circuit going from the brain all the way down the spinal cord to that finger. So whatever task it is that we're going to figure out the person needs to work on or wants to work on, we're going to set up the right environment. Some people, they need to thrive in a really busy and, lots going on in the environment, and they're good with it. So that's the first thing we're going to do is set up the right environment for them, whatever it might be.
What can it be measured? Like, could we test? Like, could we in here? Could we? Is there a way we could do? We take it online? Do you have to go somewhere? Like, and what has there like a scoring?
To charge it's a like scoring IQ system test, or something? Yeah, yeah. Finish the test now. Give us $50. They're all scams.
I don't know. That's
nothing on the internet works except for porn.
Dr. Thielman, can we get tested? And what would be the? How do they measure it? Yeah.
All right, so we measure it like by reaction time. So that's one thing we do to see if, you know, you test somebody you don't test anybody before they have a stroke, say, or before they have brain trauma. You don't know. Or even an elderly person, you can test them when they're at a baseline, when they start to have a neurocognitive problem. You can test them at a baseline. And some of the tests would be how they respond to interference tests. Like there's this Stroop test out there, which is a simple one that just you have to name certain things and then it changes on you to the color and you still have to name the actual words as opposed to the color. Something like that is interference. Reaction time is another one we test, or just the time it takes to do a task, whatever it is, you know, get up from a chair, walk across the room and grab a cup, whatever it is. So time that task.
Well, that takes forever.
Neuroplasticity is improving, then they shorten the time.
I saw a thing with people with dementia where they started moving. I don't know if this is still a thing. They started putting them in houses where everything was like from the 1950s. So their brain would start to get familiarities with their youth. And that made them. Is that a load of bumpkin or what is that?
No, there's something to that because I don't know if it lasted though. Again, I'm not a.
But you know that study they were doing, yeah, where they started.
Putting, I do.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh. Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff because they thought about the environment first, and they're absolutely right. You get that environment to the patient, the what the patient really prefers, or how they're going to learn, what environment they're going to learn in. You're going to help them out, and you're going to set them up for the best chance for success that they
so
can have.
So for my grandfather, I should just put him in like a swamp so it looks like Vietnam?
Well, that makes sense because I've heard that, like, for
deserve
instance...
more of that joke. You can all fuck off.
I've heard, for instance, that when you're, like, in school and you're studying, if you're listening to music while you're studying, you want to keep your environment the same as when you're studying to when you're testing because that's how your brain remembers the most. So that would make sense that if you put somebody in a kitchen that they grew up in or the type of kitchen they grew up in, it's like, this is what it looked like when I learned how to cook or do these things for myself.
Yeah, so when we're really old men, and women, right? They're going to put
possibly.
Us not Jack. This is a different generation. They're going to put us in rooms, and we'll be in lazy boy recliners with friends on the TV. This is how I live now.
That sounds fucking awesome.
And then like put on Smells Like Team Spirit again. His memory's starting to go.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Remember in
we're just in flannelette shirts, with baggy jeans. Fantastic.
Yeah. Heroin needle. You remember in Coco, again, another documentary.
Yeah, yeah.
At the end, he plays the song, Remember Me. And then she starts moving her hand and starts singing.
You watched that by yourself in your house, didn't you?
I've watched it many times.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've told the story. Yeah, yeah. A woman cried on a plane next to me watching that. I told her to watch this, and I forgot her dad had just died. Bad suggestion.
Oh, my God.
And she had been drinking on the plane. She started crying as we landed. Very loudly. Anyways, fun times. mental illness, depression, anxiety, like what's the relationship between neuroplasticity and that? So,
tremendous. So after we have brain trauma, the depression, you know, goes through the roof. You know, we kind of let the people recover and we think that's all about they're processing, their brains are trying to figure out how to move again or how to think again. But the other problem is they're very depressed. You know, music definitely helps. That's why this Ageless Grace activity is so cool because it's music while we're giving them commands to try to move as well as process something. So in other words, I do this in all my classes. It's so much fun. So, you know, they're the typical thing where you pat your head and rub your belly. Mm-hmm. So we'll add a third onto that while actually asking them to say something. So they'll have to, you know, spell their name with their right hand, you know, in cursive while they're patting their head and they're kicking their left leg, you know, with their right. So we'll do all these crazy things and it's supposed to really force the brain to really open up more. And they're doing it while music is in the background. So a song they like, and then we'll, you know, put together all these songs and then we do a whole class with it. It's so much fun.
What if we don't have brain trauma like me and I'm depressed?
No, you have brain trauma.
I have brain trauma.
You have trauma in your life.
God, bucket loads. When I first met you, you were agile. You know when old people meet each other and they're really old, and that's the biggest compliment. Very active brain. Yeah. I met this woman down at the bowling club. Very active brain.
Yeah.
And so I won't get active brain.
I was agile when you met me?
No, I'm joking. Oh, okay. You were never agile.
Okay.
But stop worrying.
The brain trauma doesn't necessarily mean
agile.
Brain injury. It still matters for like just any type of trauma, right, in your life?
Exactly. So, you know, that's the thing. You know, everybody thinks about, oh, it's my muscle or it's my nerve. But no, I mean, their heart, sure, but it's all about the brain. That's mm-hmm. what I tell everybody. It's all about the brain. It's how the brain responds when I'm talking to you. It's how your brain is processing information when I'm trying to reteach somebody how to walk again. It's all about how their brain's processing. It's not how about they're getting their foot out. You know, all of those things are the peripheral stuff. It's you've got to figure out how best to communicate to the individual so that they're you can develop connections in their brain.
Yeah, we didn't ask this question about addiction, and I don't know if you have the answer to this, but can it be used to treat addiction? Because I'm an addict, there's all these, you know, you go to 12-step meetings, they say you can do that, but then I've read that there's a gambling addict. So like, there's a pill you can take. They
you
say,
got other things, Forrest.
Yeah,
say
yeah sure, short. But that's my worst one, I would say. Gambling is my most destructive, you know? Sometimes someone said there's like a pill that you can take. I think it's like for antidepressant or something like that. It'll help. But could you train your brain not to be an? Is that like a? I don't know.
Forrest is asking, how could he forget about gambling?
Oh boy, the cognitive behavioral therapy is a long road. It's hard. Yeah. And it's actually I would think that you would do some of the same, you know, environment training that I talked about. It's the environment, right? Sometimes the environment we know is going to make us worse, going to make that worse. So figuring out the right environment to be in, and then there's, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy is a whole nother. But obviously that they need to work together. You do motor therapy with cognitive therapy, and then if you have a behavioral therapist helping out,
Hoping you were going to say crosswords. And I was just going to do more crosswords. I stopped gambling.
Turns out doing shows in Las Vegas is not a good environment.
Yeah, I guess so.
What's the most remarkable recovery you've seen?
Oh, you know, and this is the great thing that's happened in the past 20 years, over the past 20 years, because I'd say for years, they wouldn't do this. So an individual, I tell you, I tell everybody, after they've had a stroke, they can get some therapy, you know, or brain trauma. They can get some therapy every year. For years, it was like you get your own therapy and then that's it. Your family's in charge of you and they're going to help you out. And as long as the rest of your life, you're not going to get any more therapy. So now they can get it every year. And I've seen people that have come into my lab with that really hemipredic arm. They can't even move it. And then we put them in a training study and they start to get their arm out away from their body. And then they'll be in another study 5 years later and they start to get some finger response and they start to use the hand again. That's, you know, that's most of my specialty areas.
I would bloody abuse that. If I only had to do therapy once a year for a couple of weeks, I'd come into you and get me arm. Come in and then... And then I'll be waving goodbye, and you'd be like, "He's come a long way."
Real scam artist.
Well, I'd get on my scooter and drive home.
How would you get your arm better if you weren't doing the therapy?
Because it's gotten better when he hasn't been watching. Because I've done the work, Forrest. I just haven't had people cheerleading me because my family aren't nice to me.
Yeah.
And so then I come to the doctor. Right, and then he does it. I jink my arm up again. It's a movie.
You sandbag in the beginning of the appointment. By the end of it, miraculous cure.
It's a movie. My left arm,
but it's not inspirational because you're lying.
They won't know that in the movie.
Okay,
they'll just make a movie about it. You think Rudy was really small?
Yeah,
he was just standing on his knees with shoes. Like he was a regular sized guy, Rudy.
Regular size Rudy.
You're 6'4", nothing. you weigh 220 pounds, nothing.
I asked Jim, can neuroplasticity be used to treat chronic pain? He said, of course, through repetition and practice. But I'd be interested in this because there are people that have chronic pain and you can retrain yourself not to feel that? Is that right? How's that?
No. There's nothing for chronic pain. It's nothing for neuroplasticity for chronic pain. It's like... It's about pain relief. So unfortunately, right, we know there's a crisis out there for pain meds, for pain relief. So they have to watch that. But there is, if we can figure out the right movements for them to do to assist it, you know, they start to move where they're in the area where they're comfortable. And then if they can slowly start to get more and more movement. So chronic pain is so hard, but it has to be a combination of meds, pain relief meds, as well as, you know, not addicting pain relief meds, as well as movement therapy, you know, which is, there's different therapies out there. It's not even just physical therapy, actually. There's some good relaxation therapies that help, because once you get them relaxed, then we can start moving a little bit.
All right. And then can you talk a little bit about, this is, I think one of your specialty areas is working with neurodegenerative diseases. I need some plasticity. So that's just Alzheimer's and things like that, and how that, so what you've done. Yeah.
Yeah. So Parkinson's was, so Jim asked me, you know, one of the most amazing stories that was for some stroke patients, you know, amazing stories, but, and then certainly getting people to walk that haven't walked is an awesome thing for anybody that's part of the family, that if anybody's had that brain trauma and they haven't walked and then they start to walk again. But it's also great for the therapist to see that change. So seeing a lot of that. But that's the first goal everybody tells you. When everybody has whatever happened to them, first thing they say is, I want to walk again. They don't say, you know, I want to be able to get up and down from the chair. I want to be able to move my arm again. They don't say that at all. They all say they want to walk again. So
If you ever get me, I'll say wank again.
Just needs to use his arm.
I always think that those paraplegics must have some blue balls on them. Fuck me, it must be hard.
Yeah,
that's probably the hardest thing.
Probably, yeah.
That's the hardest thing. Maybe breathing sometimes. Yeah.
Right, there we go. Okay, Forrest, thank you. Breathing is the first choice.
The blue balls must be an issue in your occupation, right?
For spinal cord patients, it's... If they have sensory sensation down there, they're good.
Okay.
They're all good.
All right. So I cut you off. You were telling an important story, and I cut you off with masturbation.
Oh yeah, that's okay. That was a good side. We have to throw in some spinal cord injury information. It's important. But Parkinson's. So Parkinson's, the latest theory that's really taken. You know, every city has this now. Is a whole boxing activity. So it's called rock steady boxing, where you try to get the individuals to overcome their slowness of movement, and they will go in there and box, and if they got balance, they'll kickbox and they'll walk fast. You have to watch them, but they'll watch them while they're boxing, and it's become a great thing because their feet move more, their arms move more, and it kind of slows down the progression of a neurodegenerative disease such as Parkinson's. It's awesome.
And is it like two people with Parkinson's boxing each other, and can Forrest bet on it?
I love that. Forrest probably would find a way.
I got Michael J. Fox. still in it.
But no, it's like boxing with a trainer. So it's a group activity, though. So you can do it where somebody's, you know, just punching a bag in the room, and then somebody next to you might be having a trainer with them. But it's really a group exercise class where all these individuals in Parkinson's, we have a few of them in Philly, and they all go in and they love it. And the changes in those individuals as a result of going there is phenomenal. There's lots of great stories of certain disorders that have come back really well, but that's one of the best ones lately.
So, because my wife's mad, that's her main exercise is boxing. She goes out in the yard and she has a trainer and she punches and stuff like that. She loves it. So does that mean she won't get Parkinson's?
Oh, no. Unfortunately, that's all about the brain. What's in our genetics? And then what's in our brain that could bring it out? We don't know. You know, we don't know what's going to bring it out. But is she? She's ready. I hate to say that, but if she does happen, she's ready. She's already got the basis for how to box.
And by the time she gets it, I'll be dead, so I'm not worried.
Good thoughts. Just heard your child.
Positivity all around.
Yeah. And then
that's your problem, Charlie. How about your mom, boy?
And then Alzheimer's.
I do tell people that. I do tell people that you know, as you age or as you're just recovering from whatever trauma has occurred, you're using neuroplasticity just to get you ready because you don't know what's going to happen next to you. You had a stroke and you're at risk for another stroke. Or, you know, as we get into our 80s, people fall all the time. So you're priming yourself to get ready to recover from that. And, you know, it's hard to convince anybody of that. I mean, let alone somebody that's going through it. But,
I just turned 50, and I can tell you, like, I used to not even care, but in the last couple of years, I can see how you would die in a shower. Like, I get in there, I'm like, this is slippery. I'm like, I might fall here and go there. And, like, I can see when you get to be, like, 60, 70, 80, 90. It's, like, everything's a hazard.
I sometimes look at my baby with the full knowledge that he'll have to wipe my ass one day. Like, I'm like, one day.
Why do you think he's going to do that?
Because they all, you become the parent, you know, with your, you didn't wipe your mum's ass, but you become a parent of some sort.
But you have
sort.
A fancy toilet.
You have to fill out forms, and you have to do this, and you have to make sure they're okay, and all that type of stuff. And
that's
so,
why you need the...
That's why you got to be nice to your kids.
Yes.
Got to be nice to your kids because you want them helping you out when you're old.
True.
And with Alzheimer's, you didn't mention that, but like, has it been shown to like reverse or halt the effects of Alzheimer's? Like any therapy?
Halt, yes, but not reverse. Yeah. So, you know, like anything really that's a degenerative condition, the earlier we can address it, the better that you would have to, you know, see the benefits of doing, you know, medical therapy as well as movement therapy. The earlier it's addressed, because if you address it late, you know, you ignore whatever that hand that keeps, you know, twitching or whatever, or the eye twitch that often comes on when somebody's diagnosed with MS. So whatever it is, if you have those conditions, you just have to get them checked out, because the early onset is the better time to start treating it.
It would, I guess. Man, if you had a disease named after you, do you think you'd like that? I'm just looking at that. I know if you discover it, you get named after it, but it doesn't seem like something good.
My great-grandfather, Alan Hemorrhoid, he was...
an infamous man.
A strong man, liked to sit and wiggle around a lot. It was
Alan Hemorrhoid.
Dr. Alan Hemorrhoid.
How come I've never heard of this before? They hear you, Mr. Hemorrhoid.
Well, we don't like to brag.
I don't know.
It's not in our family DNA.
Doctor, would you like a disease named after you? Dr. Thielman?
Like, wow. I don't know.
It seems like a weird thing.
Boy, I don't...
I always thought that about the guy whose name was Asperger. It's like, fuck you, dude.
Yeah.
Those kids are already going to get picked on, and then you gave him a name that sounds like Asperger.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, who the fuck do you think you are?
Even just like, individually.
I know you're a German guy or whatever. You're some type of Germanic person. Asperger, you know?
Yeah, Alzheimer. That seems like a lot of Germans.
Yeah, the Germans.
Alzheimer too, right? That's
a tough one. Yeah. Heimlich. Alzheimer. That's not a disease, but he just named the maneuver.
Yeah.
Right? They
used to call piles Hitlers until it became unfashionable. not Adolf. Dr. Hitler back in the day was the first person to find.
Yeah, he's a different guy.
I thought it was named after your great-grandfather, Alan.
Who was a Nazi.
Sorry.
Oh, boy.
Keep up, Forrest.
Okay, I think this is the time of our show called Dinner Party Facts. We ask our guest, our expert, to give some sort of interesting or obscure fact about our subject that our audience can use to impress people at home. Do you have anything about neuroplasticity?
Let's see. Yeah, the fact that music helps. I think that's a nice little fact to tell people. Is that, you know, yeah, you listening to music is entraining your brain, and if you're doing an activity with it, it's definitely a great, activity for you just to even get ready to do something. Or, right, you think about all the locker rooms when you were a kid, you know, you always had music blasting. That was good. We didn't know that, but it's a good thing. So you were really priming the brain to get ready to move.
Yeah, you have a walk-on song when you're a comedian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you find that helps, Adrian? The
helps me walk on.
No, but then get your brain.
It gives me the bit where I'm like, oh, it's starting.
Yeah. Oh, I should go out on stage now.
It signals the brain.
Yeah, I only really psych myself up like 10 seconds before I go out there. When the song starts is the only time, like a Pavlovian dog.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, time to go.
Yeah.
I don't pace around too much or anything.
No.
Not too bad.
No. He's like, how are they out there?
Yeah.
So that works for you. I mean, you're right. But people, okay, so anybody, you're right, you find your environment that works for you. But if you're struggling at something, it's probably the best thing to do is to do a little activity before it, because then it'll get you primed. That's one thing.
All right. Well, thank you for being here, Dr. Gregory Thielman. And again, if you want to find him on LinkedIn or ResearchGate, it's hashtag Greg Thielman. And then check out the neurosciencefoundation.org or Enigma Stroke Recovery Network to learn more about neuroplasticity and how it affects people. And I don't know if there's anything else you want to promote, but thank you for being here.
You know, I'm a, like I said, a PT professor at St. Joe's University in Philadelphia. So that's a nice one. And we, you look up our program and you'll get a link to our lab and see all the wonderful activities that we have doing. A lot of this research that I talked about today is all being analyzed on mostly individuals after a stroke.
So. Well, it's because you're from Philadelphia. One last question. How did Rocky get smarter with every film? The first film, he was basically mentally challenged. And then the more he got punched in the head, by the third film, he was doing Amex commercials with the Muppets. How?
You're right. I mean, he definitely should have gotten dumber because he was taking that brain trauma.
Was it all the boxing therapy? Was it the boxing therapy that made him come around?
That's it. He was counteracting all those blows to his head by all guys. That's it.
So there you go. We've solved all the problems of the world. Hey, thank you, Doctor. That was fantastic. If you're ever at a party and someone comes up to you and goes, "Do you have dementia?" You can go, "I don't know about that." You're right. Not Australian.